And we are going in our Bibles to Leviticus chapter 24. Leviticus chapter 24, we are nearing the end of the book. In fact, we'll try to finish things up next week. On one hand, I'd like to apologize for running through it so quickly. We've taken some large portions, some large chunks, and you've sat through some longer sermons than normal. You might beg to differ, but they have been longer for real. It hasn't just felt like it. But the alternative was to deal with some of that stuff two times rather than once. Truth and Consequences. Truth or Consequences was the name of a game show back in the 50s, the 60s. But what we'd like to look at today is the fact that truth, because it is truth, what we do with it will have consequences. And that's the whole point of the book of Leviticus. The truth is that God has come to dwell among His people. This God is holy. His people are not. And yet He's called them to be a holy people. He's given them the means by which their sins, their uncleannesses might be taken away. And then He gives them a way in which they're supposed to live. He's given them many different pictures throughout not just the book of Leviticus, but also the book of Exodus as He's set this all up. And He's going to revisit a couple of these pictures in chapter 24. And then He's going to talk about the consequences a little further in chapter 26. Leviticus chapter 24, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Command the people of Israel to bring you pure oil from beaten olives for the lamp." They've just gone through their Sabbaths, their feasts. They're about to talk about it again in chapter 25, where they speak of the final rest, of the larger-than-life rest on the year of Jubilee, which they never did celebrate, by the way. And in the midst of this, He says, "I want you to get a couple more pictures in your brain once again. Command the people of Israel to bring you pure oil from beaten olives for the lamp, that a light might be kept burning regularly. Outside the veil of the testimony in the tent of meeting, Aaron shall arrange it. From evening till morning before the Lord, regularly. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, and he shall arrange the lamps on the lampstand of pure gold before the Lord, regularly." End of verse 2. Regularly. Keep it burning regularly. Verse 3. From evening till morning, regularly. Verse 4. Before the Lord, regularly. Verse 5. "You shall take fine flour and bake 12 loaves from it. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each loaf. You shall set them in 2 piles, 6 in a pile, on the table of pure gold before the Lord, and you shall put pure frankincense on each pile, that it may go with the bread as a memorial portion, as a food offering to the Lord. Every Sabbath day Aaron shall arrange it before the Lord regularly. It is from the people of Israel as a covenant forever. And it shall be for Aaron and his sons, and they shall eat it in a holy place, since it is for him a most holy portion out of the Lord's food offerings, a perpetual dew." God gives two pictures that He's given before, and He underscores again for them the importance that these pictures are meant to convey truth to this covenant community. He brings them inside the veil again. He looks at the furniture again. And He brings them just into this outer section, the holy place, not the holy of holies. He brings them to the holy place. And the first article that He brings them to is the lampstand. But again, as we've worked through the furniture inside the tabernacle, we need to remember the purpose of these items. There were three realities that God would use to fuel this biblical worship. And He sets them up in such a way with that Ark of the Covenant that God wants His people to know that He wants to meet with them. It's right here between the wings of the cherubim that God would show up and He would speak. He would talk. He would meet. It is there that God is. It's the footstool of God. His throne is in the heavens, but this is the one place on planet Earth where God intersects with His creation. It was a most holy place. And God said, I want you to build this tabernacle, and I want you to put this box, this ark, with this covering, this ark of the covenant right here. And I want you to understand that I want to meet with you. It's an amazing thing. It's an act of grace, because this is sinful people that God is choosing to come and to meet with. Number two, there's that table of showbread. It stands on the north side of the tabernacle. It has 12 different pieces of bread on it. And that table represented a meal that God would have with his people, a meal that indicated friendship, fellowship, loyalty, devotion. It's sharing that meal together. And then there's that candelabra on the other side that spoke of God's blessing to his people. It was the only thing that brought forth light in this room that was floor to ceiling gold. Everything, all the posts and everything inside are covered with gold, and this light would reflect off of all the gold resplendently inside that tabernacle. And this light itself was constructed in such a way that spoke of God's blessing. It's this light that God first draws attention to in Leviticus chapter 24. We've seen before how this is constructed, that each of these intersections here are a budding branch, if you will, as God is showing forth the life of an almond tree. Almond blossoms, almond fruit, almond buds, and on the top there's seven different lamps that are lit. And he says, I want you to understand, Moses, I'm giving you these feasts, I'm giving you these rests, I'm giving you these Sabbaths. Here's what I'm trying to picture for you. When you live life in light of my blessing, there will be rest for my people. There's life in my blessing. There's rest, but it's only in the light of my blessing. As he's giving them these pictures, he's giving them tangible things that they only get to see. Well, they don't get to see. They would pack these up in bags and so on. They would not get to see these things, but they would know they're there. Even when they would travel, they would be covered with bags, and then they would only be brought into the holy place and uncovered once they were inside. So most people didn't get to see it, but there was something that they got to participate in. Did you see it there in verse 2? Command not the priests to bring you pure oil for the lamp, but who? Command the people. Let the people be involved in this process. Where does this oil go? It goes inside the tent. What does it do? It keeps the lamps lit. But we never get to see the lamps. Right. You have to trust that what you bring is used for God's purposes to accomplish what he's required of you. And God is doing something that you don't even get to see right now. But if people don't bring the oil, what happens to the lamps? They stop. They go out. What God is doing in the midst of this, he's bringing together two truths that sometimes theologians don't bring together very well. He's bringing together the fact that all of God's blessing is entirely dependent upon God. It's the light of God's presence. It's the light of God's blessing. It's God who's the source of life. It's God who causes the bud to grow and to sprout and to blossom and then to bring forth fruit. It's God, it's God, it's God. It's all God. On the other hand, there's man's responsibility. And if man doesn't bring the oil, if man doesn't do his part, there is no light. And so there's this double tension in the text. It's all of God, and it's all dependent on man, and it's not contradictory. It's a both and. Man does his part, God does his part, And it's part of the tension, especially of this old covenant. Because God is setting up a covenant and says, listen, I will do my part, and you must do your part. We don't find out till it's the book of Romans where we finally say, you know what? God tells us the whole point of the law is to convince us of our sin, to convince us of our need of a Savior, to show us that no matter how hard we try, we can't. God must. And so God takes over the whole of the covenant and writes a new covenant that's dependent solely on Him. But God brings together this tension. It's all on God and it's all on His people. And He says, this is what is at stake in this picture, my blessing. My blessing that brings life. And we've talked before how this candelabra would be fashioned with all the different cusps and buds and fruits and the things that are representative there. And it's meant to reflect an almond tree in blossom with life, with promise of more life, with promise of more blessing, with promise of more fruit. And you can see the shape of the candelabra itself looks like a budding almond tree, if you will. The point is that from this candelabra goes forth the light of God's presence. And God's light is God's life. Can you think of a verse in the New Testament that says that? In Him was life, and the life was what? The light of men. John chapter 1, verse 5. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light came into the world, and darkness could not comprehend it. But this life lights all men. God is the source of my blessing. God is the source of my life. God is the source of my life. His light is my life. This is a spiritual picture. He brings us to the other side. The candelabra is on the south side. He brings us across to the north side. And He spends some time looking at the bounty of God's blessing. We see the light of God's blessing or the beauty of God's blessing. We could use either term. This resplendent glory of God's blessing. On the other side, of just across, is the bounty of God's blessing. And there's six loaves on each plate. The whole point of it is that there is a loaf for every tribe that comes to the table. That's a blessing. That's a huge blessing, but only if you're inside the tribes. Only if you're inside the covenant people. There's no loaf there for anybody outside the 12 tribes. Praise God, He did away with this old covenant. But it's a beautiful picture that all who belong to God will have a seat at the table. But again, look at where these come from. Verse 5, take fine flour, bake 12 loaves, so on and so forth. You shall set them in these piles. You shall put frankincense with them. It'll be a sweet aroma. But He says, verse 8, it is from the people of Israel as a covenant forever. These loaves come from the people. God's the one who gives the blessing. But the loaves come from the people. If the people don't bring the loaves, are there any loaves? The picture's broken. Okay. But what God's wanting to give them in this picture is not the beauty of His blessing, but the bounty of His blessing. Every day, every day, every day, every week, every week. And there's frankincense that sits atop them. They wouldn't eat the frankincense. It's just there as a part to go with it. But they would... It would probably be joined with the drink offerings that would be poured out or the incense offerings over on the golden altar. But either way, this whole point is He's pointing to the fact that my life is hid in God. My life is dependent on God. I'm dependent on God for the beauty of His blessing and for the bounty of His blessing. And we're going to see what that looks like in chapter 26. He's going to say, I will give you everything you need to bring me what what I need to keep these pictures going for you. I will make sure that I send rain so that the ground is able to sprout, so that the buds are able to grow, so that you're able to glean and to harvest. And I'll make sure that you can eat what you need to eat. In fact, I will make sure that you'll still have some until another harvest comes in. In fact, when we get there in chapter 26, he's going to say, you're going to have so much that you're going to have to get rid of the old in order to bring in the new. You're going to just throw it away. You can't eat as much as I'm ready to give to you. And that's the whole point. God says, come to the table. There's room for you. There's a place set for you. And when you come, come hungry, because I'm ready to fill you. Remember what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 in the different blessings that he says there on the Sermon on the Mount? Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness. What's that next phrase? They're going to be filled. We've been talking, I think Caleb and I were talking last night, about different hungers, different appetites. God gives us hungers, God gives us appetites, sometimes for things that can't be satisfied this side of eternity. God gives us a picture right here of hunger, of bread, just bread, but bread that is never running out, bread that will be there all the time, bread that is sufficient, and he wants us to be hungry for his blessing. He wants us to be hungry for his blessing. And he wants us to see ourselves as blind apart from his light. God himself is our life, and he's giving us pictures, and he's speaking of yes, physical life, but he's speaking of more than physical life. His whole point is that your life is bound up in me. All of it. Yes, for the food you need to eat today. Yes, yes, but more than that. Yes, for the rains that fall from the sky, but more than that. Your life, your eternal life, is dependent not on your efforts, but on God's grace. We come to the middle of this passage, chapter 24, verse 10. Now an Israelite woman's son, whose father was an Egyptian, he's a half-breed, went out among the people of Israel, and this Israelite woman's son and a man of Israel fought in the camp. The Israelite woman's son blasphemed the name and cursed. That is, he defied God's authority, he rejected God's person. So they brought this man to Moses. His mother's name was Shelomith, the daughter of Dibri, the tribe of Dan. They put him in custody till the will of the Lord should be made clear. They knew that he shouldn't, but when he did, now what happens? Verse 11, then the Lord, or verse 13, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, bring out of the camp the one who cursed. Let all who heard him lay their hands on his head. Let the congregation stone him, and speak to the people of Israel and say, whoever curses his God shall bear his sin. Whoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him, the sojourner as well as the native, when he blasphemes the name, shall be put to death. God's given us in this text, immediately before this, pictures of life, 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 the beauty of God's blessing, the light of life, the abundance of God's blessing, the bounty of God's life. Here we have a man who, and God's putting this story together. This time it's not priests who are supposed to be holy. Nadab and Abihu. They reject God's holiness. They die. Whoever comes close to me and rejects me and doesn't take me seriously, they die. This is a peripheral fella. He's from the tribe of Dan, who's going to have a northern portion. He's going to be kind of on the outskirts of Israel, way up at the top. In fact, you could kind of forget about him and it won't really matter. In fact, he's not only on the outskirts, he's a half-breed, for crying out loud. This guy is a nothing as far as the Israelite camp is concerned. But what he does is everything. Because in the book of Leviticus, the whole point is that God's coming to live with his people so that the sin can be brought in and taken care of by God, and God's holiness can go out and reach to the outermost parts of the camp. Whoever's a part of this covenant community must be holy, or they cannot be a part of this community. And so he says down there in verse 16, this is for the sojourner that lives with you, as well as for the native. If they're a part of being a part of my blessing, then they must be a part of honoring my name. My name is my blessing, it's my glory, it's my life. But when they reject my name, when they trivialize my name, when they blaspheme my name, when they reject my authority, what's in store for that person is death. And so they take him outside the camp and they stone him. Verse 23, so Moses spoke to the people of Israel. They brought him out of the camp, the one who had cursed. They stoned him with stones. Now God uses physical death here. He's been talking about spiritual life and using pictures, candles, light, bread. He's been talking about spiritual life. But now something happens. A line has been crossed. And he says, listen, when this line is crossed, it's my name. It's my glory. It's my honor. It's my reputation. If they reject my name, they reject me. And if they reject me, they reject life. Verse 17, he builds on that. Now whoever takes a human life shall surely be put to death. Whoever takes an animal life shall make it good, life for life. If anyone injures his neighbor, as he's done, so it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Whatever injury he's given that person, it shall be given to him. Whoever kills an animal again shall make it good. And whoever kills a person shall be put to death. Again, same rule for anybody in this community, sojourner as well as the native. God talks about the sanctity of his name, and he talks about the sanctity of his image. Listen, you cannot be a part of this community and think it's just about God and me, and other people don't matter. He says, if you're in the community, I want you to understand how much I value everybody else in this community too. And I want you to value them. We're so quick to be able to brush aside people that don't fit our agenda, that don't fit with what we want and how we perceive and what direction we're going. We're so quick to brush them aside. We wouldn't kill them physically. But God uses this physical picture of life and death. And he says, if this happens, you must kill them. And here's why. God institutes capital punishment for certain crimes within this community. He says, I want you to see what death looks like. I want you to hear what death sounds like. I want you to smell what death smells like. And I want you to hate it. Because I want you to choose life rather than death. There's two times we're given some graphic illustrations in this book. Nadab and Abihu, and now this Danite, half Danite, if you will. Both times they cross a line, the line that defies God's holiness, and both times death is required because God's holiness must permeate the camp. He's giving them pictures of spiritual life. And then he gives them pictures of physical death, because what's at stake in this isn't just physical death. It's spiritual death if they reject this God. And that's the point. It's spiritual death. It's eternal separation. It's never blessing, always damned, apart from this God. And that's the import and that's the weight as he comes down to the end of this book. He says, you can think holiness is a trite thing. It's a moot point that it doesn't matter. But I'm telling you, it matters, and it matters this much. We move up to chapter 26. Remember, all of this is taking place at the Mount, Mount Sinai, a mount that God is using to help them understand what this concept of holiness is through trumpets and smoke and the coming down of God's presence and glory and tabernacles and priests and sacrifices. And all this stuff is happening here at the Mount, a mount where this people who's been called out from the world is learning what it means to be holy. We come to chapter 26, and God's going to repeat a couple of the commandments. Verse 1, you shall not make idols for yourselves, or erect an image or pillar. You shall not set up a figured stone in your land to bow down to it, because I am Yahweh, and I am your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths, and you shall reverence my sanctuary, because I am who I am. I am Yahweh. I am the living God. God is going to use two mountains as they come into the land. Mount Gerizim is over on the left. Mount Gerizim and Ebal. These two mountains provide the blessing, where half the tribes are standing over on Mount Gerizim and half the tribes are standing on Mount Ebal. Those on Gerizim are reciting the blessings. Follow God and you'll be blessed, and you'll be blessed, and you'll be blessed. The other folks are on the other side, and this little amphitheater, Shechem, sits in the middle here. It's where the tabernacle is going to sit when they first come into the land. And this tabernacle sits between two choices. You can either follow me and be blessed, or you can choose to reject me and choose death. If you choose blessing, you choose life. If you reject blessing, you choose death. Don't you love it when life is simple? Either this or that. I hate to go into the store and buy toothpaste. You ever had to do that? There's like 76 kinds of toothpaste. I want ones that makes your teeth clean. That's all I want. I really don't care. I don't care what it tastes like, though I don't want it to taste like black licorice. But as long as it doesn't taste like black licorice, I'm okay with the toothpaste. I don't want it to give me too much foam in my... I really don't care. I just want toothpaste. There's like all these... God makes life really simple for us. He says, here's your options, okay? Life... death. Oh man, which one do I? And he makes it really easy. Like, so choose life. He even tells them which one to choose. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 15, 19. Choose life. I'm setting before you life and death. So choose life, for crying out loud. Exclamation point, smiley face, all, whatever you can do to, God's saying, yes, this is it. But the whole point of what he's getting at as he begins to wrap up this book in chapter 26, he starts out and he says, now listen, I want you to understand that your blessing is exclusive. There's no other gods before me. None, none. Other gods means death. I alone am your God. I alone am your source of life. Alone, by myself. Nothing added, but nothing taken away from me. Okay? I'm making it as simple as I can. This is what holiness... He comes down to the end of the book. He says, this is what holiness looks like. Exclusive worship. Exclusive supremacy. And you know where I want that to be manifested? I want it to be manifested in your times and in your space. So he says there in verse 2, keep my Sabbath times and reverence my sanctuary. Bring my holiness, bring my supremacy out of theory, out of the Sunday school class, out of the tabernacle and bring it into real life and let the rubber meet the road. This is what it looks like. If you would have my blessing, it's my exclusive supremacy in time and space. In all of your time, in all of your space. That's what God demands. I wonder, friend, if you're here this morning and you accepted God's gift of salvation. Oh, you've prayed. You've prayed for God's blessing. That's wonderful. But have you ever asked Him to take control of all of your life, all of your time, all of your space? Have you ever taken other idols off of the altar of your heart and given Him the exclusive supremacy in your life? Because that's what He means by sin. Sin is anything that pushes God off the throne of my heart. It's what I give to Him. It's my dessert of death. God, here's what I have, and I know I deserve death because of it. So bring something in my place that's perfect, can stand in my place and absorb your wrath and take the death that I deserve. God gave pictures of that through that sacrificial system. But He provides it in the person of Jesus Christ. And so when Jesus says, listen, I want to give you life, but understand it will cost you this, only everything. And so the rich young ruler says, I'm willing to follow, I'm willing to do. Jesus says, wonderful, so give up everything you have. Because I want to be all you have. So as He works down through these blessings on the mount, in the first chapter 26, verses 3 through 13, He says, verse 3, if you walk in my statutes, if you observe my commandments and do them, then let me tell you what's going to happen. I will give you rains in their season. The land will yield its increase. The trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall last till the time of harvest of the grape. The grape harvest shall last till the time for sowing. You're going to eat your bread to the full, and you'll dwell in the land securely. There's going to be prosperity. There's going to be lots and lots and lots and lots. You will eat your full. Verse 6, I will give you peace in the land. You shall lie down and none shall make you afraid. I'll remove harmful beasts from the land. The sword will not go through your land. I'm going to give you peace. Understand, He's talking to, this is Old Covenant. This is the people of God. And it's a corporate nation, it's in a specific place, it's at a specific time, and God says, I'm going to use you to bring my blessing to all peoples. That's my point. That's my purpose. It's going to be Jesus, and it's going to be worldwide. But these are the promises that God gives, because He wants His people to understand this. When I choose God, I choose true prosperity. Now, it doesn't mean that He's going to make you personally rich. There's plenty of preachers we can name down in Texas. We can name down, you take Bruce Burkholder, you go down in South America, the health and wealth gospel is alive and kicking down there. God is not giving these promises to individuals. He's giving them to a nation that He's using at a specific time and a specific way. And He says, I want people to see what my blessing looks like. Because there's coming a time when all of this world is going to melt with a fervent heat. There's going to be a new creation, new heavens, new earth, and I will take away from everybody who rejects me everything they have. And I will give to everybody who belongs to me more than they could ever imagine. And that's what we talk about, the streets of gold. I've got a mansion just over. These aren't pretend things. They're real things that He wants us to long for, but only in proportion to the fact that they draw us closer to Him. They show us His beauty. They show us His glory. He says, I'll give you peace. He says there in verse 7, you shall chase your enemies. They'll fall before you by the sword. 5 will chase 100. 100 will chase 10,000. Your enemies will fall before you by the sword. I'll turn to you and make you fruitful and multiply you. That's that creation blessing. And I will confirm my covenant with you. He says, I'll give you protection. When the fire comes, I'll be there with you. When the flood comes, I'm going to pass through those waters with you. When the enemy comes, I'm going to turn them away. I'm going to protect you. Why? Because you're my people and I'm your God. And my name is on you. My character's at stake and how well I take care of you. Finally, he says down in verse 11, I will make my dwelling among you. My soul will not abhor you. I will walk among you and I will be your God and you shall be my people. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt so that you should not be slaves. I've broken the bars of your yoke. I've made you to stand tall, to walk erect. Here's my point. I want to be with you. And I want to be with you not as a beaten down people, but as a lifted up people who represent my name, who bear my glory, who bear my image, who look like me. And I'll be with you. This is if you choose me. If you choose life, I'll give you prosperity. I'll give you peace. I'll give you protection. I'll give you my presence. I will never leave you nor forsake you. But if you do not, and so chapter verse 14 down through about verse 40, he's going to talk about the curses. On the flip side, verse 14, if you will not listen to me, you will not do these commandments, if you spurn my statutes, and if your soul abhors my rules so that you will not do my commandments, but break my covenant, then I'll do this. I'll visit you with panic. He's going to use a bunch of different P words. There's panic down in verse 25. There's pestilence. Put pestilence with prosperity because those two are opposite. I'll give you prosperity in the land where the land will produce a lot. I'm going to send pestilence where all of your crops are going to die because they've got bugs in them. I think Caleb's been over at the Brannings. You guys have more stuff planted this year than ever, as Rachel has this huge garden that she's planned out for you. Imagine all the work that goes into that. And then bugs start eating and rot starts decaying it from the inside out. God says, you know what? You can work as hard as you want. You will labor in vain because what at the end of the day, who controls the blessing of that fruit? It's me. I can either make you prosperous or in a minute, I can make you have pestilence. And if you reject me, understand that I will send out my curse. And there's going to be, he's going to say this. Look at verse 16. I will visit you. Verse 17, I will set my face against you. Verse 19, I will break the pride of your power. I will make your heavens like iron. I will make your earth like bronze. Verse 22, I will let loose the wild beast against you. Verse 25, I will bring the sword upon you. I will send pestilence. Verse 26, I will break your supply of bread. It's God who's actively at work, but he's at work against his people rather than for his people. He says, you can choose to be contrary to me, but if you choose to be contrary to me, I must choose to be contrary to you. Not that I want to. This is your choice, not mine. My choice is your life. My choice is your blessing. My choice is your prosperity, your peace. Opposite of peace is panic. Opposite of protection, he says, I'll make you powerless. You won't be able to stand. 10,000 of you won't be able to stand before 10. I will make you to perish. Or he uses some D words. Very nice if you like alliteration. I'll give you disease, devastation, destruction, death. Death, death, death. Choose me, choose life. Ignore me, reject me, but do so at your peril. I love when we get down to the very end of this passage because he doesn't leave it here. Look at verse 40. He brings them out of their land. Verse 39, those of you who are left shall rot away in your enemies' lands because of their iniquity. Because of the iniquities of their fathers, they shall rot away, just like their fathers. But, verse 40, if they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers, the treachery they've committed against me, and walking contrary to me, so that I walk contrary to them and brought them out of the land into their enemies, if then their uncircumcised heart is humbled, confession and humility, and they make amends for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob. I'll remember my covenant with Isaac. I'll remember my covenant with Abraham. I'll remember my land. Verse 44, and for all that, when they're in the land of their enemies, I will not spurn them. I will not abhor them. I will not forget them forever so as to destroy them utterly and break my covenant with them. Because, not because of them, but because I am their God. I will, for their sake, remember the covenant with their forefathers, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, so that I could be their God. Because I am this kind of God. I am the Lord. And then verse 46 looks like it could wrap up the entire book of Leviticus. And these are the statutes and rules and laws that the living God made between himself and his holy people through Moses at the holy mount. That's a pretty awesome thing. I love how this book ends, because when it all gets said and done, holiness isn't going to be something that his people can accomplish. They must choose it. But when it's all said and done, the story of this people under this old covenant shows that man can't. That man always breaks God's covenant. We needed something more. And so God, in his mercy, says that ultimately holiness is not based on the performance of man, but it's based upon the grace of God. God who sent a man, Jesus Christ, to be the God-man. And that's what we celebrate as we come to the table this morning. We celebrate God's grace because we are covenant breakers, but God is a covenant keeper. And in his grace, he sent his Son to die on a cross to take away our sins.